Today's program is brought to you by the Greenhouse Tavern. For more information, visit thegreenhousetavern.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Heritage Radio Network. I'm Brianna Kurtz, co-host of Eat Your Words. As always, we're coming to you from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and today we have a special spotlight interview. How does this sound? Mango Manchego ice cream, dark chocolate and rye whiskey ice cream, rum plum frozen custard. Well, folks, it's getting warmer and warmer out there, and summer is within reach, and Jenny Brittenbauer knows all about those delicious sounding desserts because they are recipes in her newest book, Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream Desserts. And Jenny is here in the studio with us today. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So we're going to jump right in. This is your second book, a follow-up to Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream at Home. Are you kind of picking up where you left off, or what's different about this book?
It's different. It's not just sort of a pickup of where we left off. It's ice cream centric. It's first about ice cream, and then about desserts that you can make to go with ice cream, like the perfect cake that absorbs the ice cream as it melts, cobblers, empanadas, and all sorts of other things too. And then it's all about freestyling and mixing and matching. Just like my first book was about, sort of, you know, some of the flavors that we've done over the last couple of years, but also so that you can kind of mix and match the techniques from different pages to then make whatever you want to make. So the really cool thing about the book really is what I call cooking between the pages, which is like sort of mixing and matching from other recipes.
Excellent. And one thing that really jumped out at me was how you approach your work. And I think I'm picking up a cookbook, which I am. And then all of a sudden I'm reading about art and perfume and science. And can you elaborate on those elements and why they're so personal to you and how they inform your work?
Yeah, you know, I didn't get into ice cream really through the culinary world. I'd been working at a French bakery, and I was so inspired by the French-speaking kitchen and learning a lot. And in fact, I spent a year making the croissants there and loved it and thought about going to pastry school. But I was also studying art at The Ohio State University and art history. And I had this serious hobby that was turning into what I thought was going to be a profession of blending perfumes. This is in the early to mid-90s. And so I had built a big collection of essential oils, some very, very expensive, some less. And I was really learning about how to blend those and what to blend those into. In fact, I used to have to drive to Kentucky to buy the highest proof alcohol, because in Ohio you couldn't buy it at the time, so that I could make these perfumes that would dissolve in the alcohol. And I started making perfume ice creams because butterfat melts at body temperature. It's very sort of unique food. The fat that's in milk and cream, which is what makes ice cream so delicious, you can load it up with scent and freeze it, and then it melts immediately on your tongue, and all of that scent is released. So I really think of ice cream almost as edible perfume. And then I also think of that as sort of a multi-layered sensory experience, which is art can be.
And I think that really comes through, because another thing I loved when I was slipping through this is the ingredients. Pumpernickel, cumin, juniper, magnolia. And those are things that you do see in savory cooking, but is it a challenge to make those same ingredients work in this kind of space, in the desserts or the ice creams? And do they actually work the same in recipes?
Well, ice cream is nothing but challenges. I mean, from the very beginning, you know, it's all about making sure that it's frozen, which is, a challenge. I mean, we all even notice in our home freezers how keeping something frozen like ice cream can be difficult. It has to be fresh. You know, I mean, like, there are all sorts of challenges in ice cream. But here's the thing, you know, I always say the flavors get me out of bed in the morning, new flavor ideas. That's the fun part. You know, you can read about, you can walk into any library and open any book and there's a flavor idea in it. You can make a flavor out of anything. You can be inspired to do that. And that's so much fun. If that's what gets me out of bed in the morning, it's the body and the texture of the ice creams that keeps me awake at night. I have a very specific style of ice creams that I'm going for, that I'm shooting for, that I need to make, and I call them American hard body ice creams.
Okay, what does that mean?
So our ice creams are meant to be served hard. They sort of melt at a certain rate. They're very dense. They're not loaded with air. So when you put it on a cherry pie, it melts and it turns into a sauce, but kind of slowly, and it slowly turns into this sort of buttercream texture. And that's what I'm shooting for with every flavor all the time. So to get back to how we make all these flavors in that way, you know, everything you add to ice cream upsets that balance mm-hmm. of ingredients, upsets the sort of physical components of the experience of ice cream. When you add strawberries, they're full of water, so you get iciness and so on. So every time you make a new ice cream, you have to be aware of how that's going to affect the sensory balance and sensory facets of the flavors. And so anyway, that's all complicated. But hopefully, you know, in the book, with the techniques, you know, when I wrote the book and the first book too, it's all about being able to do it in a home environment. So I started building these recipes with the equipment that you have at home first and work backward from there in order to get the texture and the body perfect first. And then it's like all these flavors you can make at home, and we've got this sort of ice cream that's sturdy, that will last, that will work for you at home, and you can make all these flavors, whatever you want with it.
So you, in the recipe development, you did just start kind of with home tools, work your way back. And I think that kind of takes some of the intimidation out of ice cream, because people might feel comfortable with more savory, but with ice cream, they're kind of like, where do you start? I think you do a really good job of helping people get there. But I feel like for every one recipe that's in the book, there must be like 10 that aren't. So how do you go through that process of getting it from like an idea, an inspiration, to on the page?
Well, you know, most of what we're doing at Jenny's and in the book too, we sort of, and in chefs and restaurants too, you sort of start with these bases in a way, you know, this base recipe that can become so many things. So when we're talking about like Manchego ice cream, we don't have to use Manchego, but you can use the same technique. And so you can alter the cheese, which, you know, wherever you are in the world, there's a cheese that's similar to Manchego that would be the similar sort of texture, and whatever that is, you can make it into ice cream. And so these are sort of almost like these base techniques that you can then use to create many different kinds of flavors, depending on what
you want. It's
really
adaptable.
Very.
You kind of touched on this already, and when we met at the Food Book Fair, you were kind enough to show me how the book really builds on itself and how that format was very intentional. And could we just expand on like why you did that and why you chose to go that route, and just maybe give an example of how that plays out?
Well, I feel like I wanted to give readers the sort of keys to the kingdom. You know, so you know, I've been making ice cream for almost 20 years. I have my way of doing it, and all of my preferences, but I know, because I get emails and I talk to people all the time, that everybody's different and everybody has their own sort of preferences and ideas and whatever. And so that's what the book is about. And we kind of stepped back a little bit in the art direction and made it less about our brand or who we are necessarily, although that is kind of who we are, but making it about lots of communities and whoever you are and whatever you want to be, whatever ice cream you want to make today, you can make using this book, you know, whether it's loaded with baked goods or whether it's more sort of sophisticated and meant to be served with something, you can make it with the book. And when you're looking through the book, that's kind of how the art direction plays out. It's just almost like a visual menu. You can kind of pick and choose from different pages. So we wanted to go a different direction.
And I think the visual is something that's really special about this book. I'm one of those weird people that reads like the acknowledgments and the publishing and the intros. And you dedicate a whole page called This Is How We Do It. And I think I have to give a special shout out to Kelsey McClellan. Is that?
Yes.
You're a photographer? Because you were involved in the art direction, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know that's your background, but it's really stunning.
Yeah, I mean, I styled all those photographs.
It's very impressive.
With Kelsey.
And I love the vintage spoons. I don't know why. It's like a little detail that just is really...
Well, that one that you've got right there was a I stole from the Four Seasons Hotel in St. Louis. I'm sorry. But anyway, yeah. But no, the spoons are great. That was something we've done forever. And, you know, in the first book, I wanted it to be sort of, as you thumbed through it, you could see every flavor all at once in front of you. And the way we did it was with a spoonful. And also, you know, you eat a spoonful. So instead of showing a whole scoop or whatever, showing you what a bite looks like is something that's kind of our trademark.
And I think
and this is also kind of just outside of the book, what makes Jenny's the empire so interesting. And you say it here, and this is how we do it. A community of craftspeople, winemakers, farmers, apiarists, am I saying that right? Cheesemakers, artists, writers, musicians, big brain thinkers, bikers, eaters, drinkers, travelers, and mathletes, all doing their part of the equation. And if you want to talk a little bit more about what you're doing outside of the book, you mean you're growing? Mm-hmm. I have to give it a shout out to Charleston because that's where I'm from. And you're opening a store there soon.
We are. In a couple of weeks, we'll be in Charleston. Yeah, our company is, we're from the Midwest. And I think and I studied art, and I actually think all of those things play into how we built our business. We built our business a different way than I've ever seen. Our business is I like to say, company. I love that word company. It's community. It means community to me. We have 450-ish people who work in our company. We have 150 people who work in our kitchen to make ice cream.
Wow.
So if you can imagine what that looks like just for a second, you know, in the sort of culinary world, we get 6,000 pounds of fresh strawberries because, you know, they're grown and picked that day. They don't get 6,000 pounds in a day, but over 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they come into our kitchen every morning, and it's all hands on deck, taking the tops off, rinsing them, drying them because we don't want more water in the ice cream, and then pureeing them to get made into ice cream. I mean, the way we do it is amazing, from a culinary perspective. But it takes a lot of people. I think of our company like a ship, you know, and everybody kind of doing their part on that ship to move it forward, you know. And then I love this. I mean, the ship metaphor is just something I use all the time. I mean, I dream in pictures, right? I think that way. But, you know, we're moving forward through wind and waves and that's, you know, it makes it so much more fun to all be together. And the other thing I think about, and I wrote about that in that last page of the book, is just that people think that this sort of, there's this lone creative genius sitting at a drafting table, and that's where all good ideas come from. And I just think, I know that that's not true at all. That creativity comes from surrounding yourself with a lot of people who think differently than you, who are smarter than you, who have different ideas. And so, that's what we do at Jenny's. We have company lunch once a month. We have all, you know, we invite everybody, from the whole company. We cook amazing meals during that that day, and we just sit around on the floor and talk to people who work in different places in the company. We learn from each other, and that's really important. We're a B Corporation. I don't know if you know that too, which is pretty exciting. It just means that we exist for people more than profit. And as a certified B Corp, what I love about it is that you know, it's like you get certified. It's like a 300-page, you know, thing that you have to do. And like, I mean, it's a rigorous certification. But what I love about it so much is that it's, you know, you sort of get your rating and then you get better every year at that. So we get better at community every year. And business is such a great way to change the world. You know, I mean, and that's, I think, all together kind of how we do it and that sort of boat that we're on, you know, together.
Did you ever imagine this? Like, you say you dream in pictures. Is this what you dreamt, or is it becoming, taking on a life of its own and getting even bigger and better than you could have ever imagined?
Well, we've never, I can say looking back all of these years, we have never once sacrificed our beliefs, our values for anything, which I think is really neat. We move forward every day. I think I thought it'd be easier, cheaper, take fewer people. You know, I didn't know anything about that. It's been really hard. And I think that's why we're all so passionate still about it, you know? So I don't know. You know, I think I never would have limited myself. I certainly never saw myself as a mom and pop shop in a market for the rest of my life, you know? But doing bigger, and having that sort of dream, you know?
Well, and now that you're moving outside of that Midwestern space and that 150-person kitchen, and now you've got employees in Nashville, you're going to have employees in Charleston, you have, how many brick-and-mortar stores do you have?
We'll have 16 with Charleston.
Okay. And just kind of taking, like, letting the company grow, taking care of the people in those communities and making sure there's a connection back to the mothership, if you will.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where do you see yourself going in the next 2 years, 5 years? Are there more books, more stores, more retail?
There will be more stores. I love stores. I sort of think of them as, it's a little lofty, but but kind of like showrooms. I mean, are our chance to put ideas out there. You know, all of the flavors that we do in the stores aren't going to end up on shelves in grocery stores. It's our chance to sort of put it out there, get feedback, and give really great service. And we're really good at that. So it's kind of my favorite part of that sort of outward, get the ice cream out there in the world, part of what we do. So there will be more stores, and we're excited about those. But as far as like a five-year plan, we've never done that. It's always just been like, you know, shoot for the moon, see what happens. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of internal things we have, you know, to figure out. I mean, dairy, we're a dairy company first. Mm-hmm. And that is just full of challenges. And you know, we've had to change, you know, the way people think about dairy, build demand for things like grass pastured and whatever. So, you know, we sort of keep this sort of wheel moving forward slowly, one foot in front of the other. And when great opportunities happen or doors open, we go through them.
And coming kind of full circle, bringing it back to the ingredients, do you let the new cultures that you're moving into, like the South, for instance, inspire new flavors? Like, are you going to be doing like sweet tea or like ice cream in Charleston or Nashville? Or
I am so inspired by American history, and well, just by history. So yes, so the Charleston flavor is awesome. And what will happen is it'll be in Charleston and only in Charleston for a little while, and then it will. We'll see how it does, and then we'll figure out where it needs to live, maybe on our website, or if it's got a bigger life outside of that. But it's awesome. It's our beautiful sweet cream ice cream with these pockets of molasses custard. So it, basically, it's like we make what's the same recipe that's between like the pecans and the crust in a pecan pie, but we do it with blackstrap molasses. And so it's this super leathery, ashy, licoricey custard. So we put pockets of that in the sweet cream and then these giant Virginia salted peanuts. And it is off the charts. We're so thrilled with it. So I think people in Charleston are going to love it. And I think it may have a larger life outside of Charleston also.
And when you're making those city-specific special offerings, flavors, are you sourcing the ingredients from the local area, or is it still coming from the main in Ohio?
We source ingredients from all over the United States and all over the world. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to be as much direct trade as we can. Okay. That, I mean, or, you know, let's just say maybe, who knows how long it'll take. It's a train we're on. 100% direct trade someday. You know, I don't know if it's 100 years from now and whatever, but what we want to do is work directly with farmers. So, if we can, or just buy great, great ingredients. So, so sometimes, yeah. So like in Nashville, we're working with, Yazoo, brewery for one of our flavors, which is really phenomenal. And it's especially great in the fall and winter. This is like beautiful, meaty sort of beer. And yeah, and so we were sort of finding these. In Georgia, we're working with peach, this like fourth generation mm-hmm. peach farm.
Oh yeah, awesome. You have to have Georgia peaches.
Yeah, and so the peach truck and in fact, our friends, they go down. It's their farm, but they go collect these beautiful peaches and take them to Nashville and sell them on the street corner from this little truck. So awesome. So we work with them, but yeah, you know, we're finding people all over the United States, and then of course when it needs to be close to our kitchen, it is. I mean, mm-hmm. things like strawberries need to be close to our kitchen. And blueberries and many other things and corn. And, you know, we have farmers that grow whole fields of those for us.
Okay. So we're going to bring it back home to the book a little bit. I have a hot seat question, but it's not meant to be too much, not pressure, but there's a lot of media and literature out there more and more every day that sugar is the enemy or one of the main causes of a lot of health issues that we're facing around the world, really. So what would you say to people who are like, do we really need another book about desserts or sweets?
So I would just say that sweets and desserts aren't necessarily the problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's not my place to comment on it, but I think when it's sweet and it tastes sweet, you know what it is and you know what you're eating. Mm-hmm. And then, therefore, you can decide to eat it or not. And I think that companies should just be very transparent about what they put in their products. On a personal note, don't believe necessarily also in labels like organic and non-GMO. I think we should just tell people what we're doing. Everybody should just know how you're doing it and who made that and whatever. But sugar is one of those things. There's no question. It's not good for you. It should not be in food that we eat that's not sweet, generally, you know. And I think when it's hidden in things, that's when we get a lot of the problems. When you don't know when you're eating it. You know, I think when you're eating something sweet, you know, well, I'm going to eat this once a week. You know, but when you're eating something that's been loaded with corn syrup, you know, corn syrup isn't very sweet, actually. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can load it up with lots of different flavors, and it can extend whatever it is you put it in, tomato sauce or chicken nuggets or whatever. And that, to me, is like, not food. But I love corn syrup. I mean, I am a corn syrup person. Like, I'll defend corn syrup. Not high fructose corn syrup, but just regular corn syrup. Mm-hmm. I love corn syrup. I think it's an awesome ingredient to use in cooking sweets.
What do you use it mostly for? What's so great about it?
Well, it's mostly glucose, and it draws water into whatever you're using it in. And it also makes it so for ice cream slightly less sweet because it's half as sweet as table sugar. So you know, it's just great. It builds like elasticity in ice cream, and in baked goods, it kind of builds this beautiful sort of moisture. You know, too much of it gets kind of putty. Like, you don't want that, but as a part of your sugar sort of options. Yeah.
Good. Well, I know you're hitting the road. Where can people find out more about where you're going to be, what's going on, find out more about the book?
You can go to jennys.com. We've got it all laid out there. It's J-E-N-I. Yeah, we have everything mapped out there for you.
Great.
I'll be all over the country, like 25 cities.
I know. Get some rest. Well, in addition to being an ice cream maven, Jenny is knowledgeable about many, many other topics. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Aaron Fairbanks, Executive Director of Heritage Radio Network, will be speaking with Jenny about some of those. Stay with us.
She's dancing by herself in a mother's summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. Studied art in Spain, tall boys across her brain. Yeah, tall boys, men, they'll do anything. They sat her in the shade, threw her a parade. All lined up, marching back and forth all day. She's boy crazy. She's boy crazy. Oh, she's boy.
And really excited to join you guys in the studio talking about one of my favorite subjects, ice cream. So, Jenny, you know, basic ingredients for ice cream, you know, milk is the big one. I want to get a sense of, you know, back when you guys got started and you're looking around for milk, what was the landscape like and how did you kind of choose what you guys were going to work with?
Well, you know, I started making ice cream in 1996. I thought, this is awesome. This is a great business idea. I'm in the middle of Ohio, surrounded by farms, dairy farms and other farms. I can make ice creams with those ingredients, right? I can walk up to a dairy farm house, which I'm not really from the country. I live in the cities, but I drive, you know, you drive in the country and you see them. And I just walk up there and ask anybody for some dairy and it'll be great. And they're going to give it to me and I'm going to make ice cream out of it and it's going to be awesome. And I'm going to, you know, whatever. Well, that was so far from the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was 22. I had pink hair. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was just getting into it. Let's see, from 1996, it took more than 10 years to finally make that happen, where we could get a sort of network of dairy farmers that we can work with. And it is something we go to battle for, every single day. It is the first thing we do when we wake up is, you know, we're working on dairy. We are a dairy company first, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, how does that work? Do you guys follow, like, the dairy markets? Like, how kind of plugged in are you? Because obviously that's really impacting kind of your cost and your product. So what are, like, the ways that you're getting information? What's the kind of need-to-know stuff for your team?
Well, we, first of all, we visit our dairies you know, we go out and we have a relationship with some of our dairy farmers, and I just want to be their advocate. I want to say that American dairy farmers are amazing people who want to make the best milk they can. Most of the dairy farmers are family farms. Many farms are some grass pastured, some fed corn or whatever they're feeding. And the dairy farmers are all about quality, and they're very passionate about what they do. And so we're kind of in love with them. And I love, Matt's been out there with me. We love just being out there on the dairy farms and all the dogs running around and, you know, the good sort of love that you feel with these family companies. And they are companies, you know. So one family can operate about 80 to 100 cows. And then, you know, if another, let's say, I mean, this is a real story, but if another brother, you know, decides they want to be a part of it, well, then they can double the herd. But if the brother then wants to go back, you know, to do something else, the herd is downsized, you know. And then, you know, but this is a sort of working farm, a family. They can all live on the farm and get out and get the cows in for milkings 2 or 3 times a day and get them back out on pasture for a certain amount of time and, you know, take care of them. And it's a wonderful sort of circle of life.
So I'm sure, like, at the beginning, you know, back in the pink hair days, you weren't thinking about, you know, pasteurization and butterfat content. And I know there's, like, some shops here in Brooklyn that I've heard are, you know, pasteurizing their milk in-house. And obviously when you're looking at, you know, dairy butterfat content is a big thing. So can you talk a little bit about how kind of your education evolved with that stuff? And were there kind of points along the way where you're like, oh, maybe we want to be looking at, you know, this percentage, or is it kind of like, this is what we work with, it's stable, it's the same, that's what we need to create a consistent product? How did that evolve for you?
It evolved slowly, and it's still evolving. I'm still learning about ice cream, and that's what's so exciting about it. I'll say it evolved slowly, but in the beginning it kind of evolved kind of quickly. I would say the first 4 years were really hard. I didn't know anything about it. And I slowly learned, I sort of became intuitive about ice cream by doing it. And then I went to Penn State, and learned all this, some of the science, behind it. But I'm really, really lucky in Ohio because truly, like, I can throw a rock to Ohio State University, from our kitchen, from my office, and really from my house too. And get over there in their pilot plant and learn about dairy in the dairy science program that they have over there. And Dr. Alvarez, who's been a mentor of mine, is a wonderful man. And he wrote the book on the sensory evaluation of ice cream. And so I have that and have him as this incredible mentor. So, you know, but what happens when you have a really good mentor is they don't tell you, don't give you any information. You know, he'll say, here's my book. You know, but I go there with, you know, okay, Dr. Alvarez, I have a theory. Here's what I think. I think protein, this is what happens when you cook it. And he'll say, yeah, it does.
So he confirms your finding.
And then we talk about Mexico because he's from Mexico City. And it's wonderful. But yeah, so he's been a great mentor. But, you know, that is how I learned slowly about that. And then watched in their pilot plant how it was made. And, you know, other things too, cheeses and yogurts and all these other things that they can make there and show. So, yeah.
I wonder too, you know, I heard you talking a little bit last night about a vegan recipe that you're kind of piloting. And one of the things that you were saying was, you know, there's challenging aspects of that when you look to scale it up. So for the regular ice creams, you know, were there points when you're like, okay, we're going from like me in my kitchen making a batch and then we're getting a little bigger and then we're making a little bit more? Like, as you're looking at the recipe development through those evolutions, were there surprises along the way where you're like, oh, going from X to Y was not that hard, but from then like Y to Z was like, what the hell?
Yeah, we're still making ice cream the exact same way we did it before. I mean, but, well, the only difference is that I have now a small test kitchen where if I want to make a change, because the thing is I will change every recipe every single time I make it. So I have my own kitchen now.
Your staff must love that.
I know. They hate it. And, you know, customers don't like that either, because the truth is 99 times out of 100, it's failure. Or it's not, you haven't made it better. But so now I have this little kitchen where I can work and I can do all those things and we can test, and we're in there every single day, all day long. And then we make it, if we like it, then we write the recipe and the, and we scale it up and we get it to the production kitchen and we do training there. But that's changed. But really, the process hasn't changed. I am all for, though, some kind of great, you know, I'd love to invent, I mean, certain ice cream machines, like a cookie machine that can make the cookies for us. There isn't one out there on the market right now. We hand make every single one of our almond cookies for our ice cream sandwiches, which is like, you know, you make meringue and almond flour, and we actually make our own hazelnut flour for it. And then it's just this immense process, right? And then we hand pipe each one, and we're doing 10 to 20,000 a week. It's insane because we have to get the spiral on them because otherwise they're not as sturdy. You know, the other cookie, you know, machines have like a bullseye, and we found that that simply didn't work. So anyway, I'm all for technology when it makes it better. And I do think that we have plenty of places we can get better and more consistent for our customers and ice cream, you know, someday.
Yeah, it's a good, like, a fun space to play around in. Well, kind of, I know we don't have too much more time, so I want to kind of go in a little bit more of a, maybe a lighter direction. The other thing you were chatting about was kind of recipe mashups, like taking one section of the book and mashing it with another section of the book, or thinking about, like, pull out, you know, there's so many different things happening in there. Maybe can you talk a little bit about some of your favorite kind of play spaces with recipes, and maybe point us to some things we should be trying out at home?
So what I love about the book, actually, is that when you kind of step back from it, it might even seem a little bit boring on the outside. I don't want to say that. I don't think it's boring, but like, let's just
say, Brianna's shaking her head.
the cakes, the lady cake, the macaroon cake, the Weizmann's cake, I mean, they're just a 9-inch round pan of cake, you know, and that's it, with some powdered sugar on it. But what you can do with those is just so much. So one example of that is if you take the Weizmann's cake, which is this supremely dark chocolate cake. It's the only chocolate cake recipe you need. You can just make it in a pan, serve it with ice cream, and it's beautiful. But if you take two of those and slice them in half and mix the salty caramel sauce from the back of the book with a giant handful of toasted pecans and some coconut, and spread that between the layers, so you got four layers, and put that on top, it's like a German chocolate. I mean, it is a German chocolate cake. And it's like the best one you've ever had. And you can do this all over the book. If you take the lady cake, which is this sort of beautiful, perfect cake, it's like this slightly eggy cake, slice that in half. And then I have this hilarious frosting that I make with marshmallow fluff, but which, if you think about it, is sort of like almost like a sugar syrup, like a Italian buttercream, only it's like Midwest buttercream. Anyway, it's butter in that and the marshmallow cream. So you mix that with coconut and layer that through the lady cake, and you've got this amazing coconut cake in the style of like a bakery cake. You can take we have a beautiful pancake that's like the cast iron pancake, and it kind of explodes in this giant, into this giant thing in a cast iron skillet, but you can squeeze it with, you know, lemon juice and butter and powdered sugar and serve it with ice cream. Or halfway through the cooking, open it up and put some beautiful ham on it and some cheese, throw it back in there and get it really blackened. And that's dinner. You know, these are sort of recipes that you can build upon. And then every recipe in the book, so the cobblers are meant to be made with lots of different fruit. You can do, you know, and the Betty's too, you know, the sheet pie you can make with all sorts of different things. One of the best recipes in the book, though, is the corn syrup custard, which you can stuff empanadas with. It's crazy. It's crazy. And you put some nuts in there too if you want. There's a chocolate glaze in the back of the book, which you can, you know, depending on how much milk you put in it, you can like cover a cake with it, or you can put less milk in it and make it thicker and stuff an empanada with it. I mean, you can even stuff the tart shell with it and then put nuts in it.
Stop.
So you know what I mean?
Stop
like,
it.
So you can
Stop.
Do all this stuff. And these ideas, are also going to live on our website. We keep doing them to the, like on our website, and we're doing little videos too. So you can kind of go and
play around.
And we want to hear what other people are doing too, because it's really, I want to sort of, to be almost less about us and more about what other people are doing. That what you make out of the book should be different than what somebody else makes out of the book.
Yeah. And it's like kind of teaching us to fish versus
giving
us a fish. Well, and kind of going back to I think Michael Pollan always says that, like, you know, eat whatever you want, just make it yourself. So then you're kind of clear, because you know, you're only going to make, you know, donuts and cakes and ice creams so many times in your month. So you're kind of like, protect yourself a little bit there.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Although I do think that, that you can make this a beautiful cherry pie and spend all your time on that and then go buy our ice cream. And that would be fine too. It really is beautiful. And you know, we spend all of our time making it the way that you would make it at home. Beautiful ingredients. And actually even better than what you can make at home. Sorry. I mean, I do think that you can make gorgeous ice creams at home, but because we can source our vanilla beans from Lulu Sturdy in Uganda, who is getting only the most perfect ones just for us, that vanilla melting all over your pie is
you got a head start. Well, I have amazing. One more question. I'm going to hand it back over to Brianna. The square spoons were in the gift bag last night. What's up with the square?
Well, they're officially gelato spoons. They're really supposed to be for gelato. That's and we've been using them for a long time, but they work better in American ice cream. You know, I keep calling my style of ice cream American hard body ice cream. And so you don't need a bowl in the spoon necessarily for that. Actually kind of gets in your way. So having that square spoon or square sort of spade to kind of cut a piece of ice cream off and then eat it is even more perfect for ice cream. I mean, that is if you're not licking it off a cone, which is, you know, the ultimate perfect way to eat ice cream.
Well, like my hard body ice cream will create a hard body, hopefully. If I'm doing
it
right.
No, we're designing a t-shirt for this too, so I'll make sure you get one.
I like the ones that have like the built-in abs, you know.
Totally,
awesome. Well,
totally.
Thanks a lot. It was great to get a chance to ask you a couple of my burning ice cream questions, of which there are many, but
oh, thank you.
Jenny, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today about Jenny's splendid ice cream desserts. Check out jennys.com to see all the events and all your traveling, where you're going to be. The book came out on May 20th, so pick up a copy wherever books are sold. And good luck. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So what you want to do? I'm standing right in front of you. Like a broken tree.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.